Hey guys, welcome to the show. If you've been following along for the last few weeks, you heard me talk about wanting to change the name of the show. I've been toying with it now for several years, thinking about changing it to Days in the Wild to match my guiding service and be the same as my old TV show, mainly for marketing purposes, keeping it simple. Also, I think it scares away a few people. With the name, sounds a little pretentious. I did a poll, and actually most of you guys told me to keep it the same. I think over 65 or closer to 70% of the people told me to keep it the same. But not that I'm not listening to you. I'm just, I've gone back and forth. There was enough people, you know, 35 or 40% somewhere around there that said to go ahead and change it and thought it was a good idea. So, I think coming up here in first part of April, the name change will change over, so from now till then. But the contents of the show, the structure, the format of it, what have you, will all stay the same. I'm not gonna make it too commercialized like a lot of these other podcasts that you're listening to. I'm trying to keep the advertisements to a minimum and just have one or two sponsors for the whole podcast and not bombard you with a bunch of crap. So we're gonna, like I said, roll out probably first week of April as the new name change. So if you see that change happen, don't get scared. It's still here. We're still here for you. So without further ado, we're going to roll into this next episode, and we appreciate all your patronage over the last, 10 years, 11 years now, 11 seasons we've been doing this. So really appreciate you, and we'll keep them coming. Thanks a lot. Hi, welcome to Interviews for Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're going to talk about hunting California with my good friend Perry Kremens. We're going to talk specifically about hunting those high mountain bucks in like B zone in those areas. What's up, Perry? How are you?
Hey, John, I'm great. And good morning to you. Happy, I guess it's not too late to say Happy New Year because we haven't said Happy New Year yet.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, it's only 20 days in anyway.
Yeah, only 20. Yeah, it's almost over, right?
Cheers.
Yeah. Time flies, that's for sure. And as you know, January, man, it's in the outdoor industry, January is show month, man. They're just back to back to back to back.
Yeah, so January for me is hunting month. It's honestly the time of year that I look forward to the most. And for some reason, the last 2 years, I have spent less time in the field than I ever have. And partly because I shouldn't say spend time hunting for myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, and partly that has to do with the, guiding, ramping up the guiding business thing, back in when I first started doing it was just, take a guy here, take a guy there and just kind of leave it at that. Now it's a little bit more serious. That takes away from your ability to go do things.
Yeah. It's kind of, I'm the same way, being, once you become an outfitter and it's not even really about making some money. It's just occupying some time. And it's kind of, because I think you're kind of like me. You're just like, some people just get the outdoors and you're kind of a great hunter. You get the species, and it's kind of, to me, it's our obligation to kind of put some of that heritage back to folks that really are not as fortunate as us to have the connections and the background to learn the hunting,
Right, right. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's a huge time siphon, but you know what? It's for me, it's just as fun to go out and some guy that does, maybe it's his first deer, or maybe he's been hunting deer for 5 years and he's been unsuccessful, and to get him out and get him a deer. I mean, that's going to keep him engaged in the outdoors, which long term is going to help all of us.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. I enjoy it. I enjoy it. I mean, if I didn't, I wouldn't do it. So
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like I said, if people think you're getting rich off just being an outfitter, they're sorely mistaken.
That's for sure. I mean, you could do very well in outfitting. There, I know guys that have, but you gotta have a big, gotta have a big like factory, you know?
Yeah, you got to have a big outfit and
Yeah.
basically either a very understanding family or no family.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's not something I'm willing to do. It's
No, you
something.
got to.
It's
Yeah,
just
you
something
gotta
a little bit here and there, and you know.
juggle. That's what we do is we juggle.
For sure.
Great.
So I'll see you in Utah, but
Yeah.
I'm not attending any of the other shows. Actually, matter of fact, my cousin just left for shot this morning. They're going to do setup and all that stuff. And
Nice. Now, is that the one that does the shooting bags?
yeah.
Great. Well, I'll have to. Do they have a booth downstairs there this year?
You know what? He doesn't have a booth. He only went there for 2 days to go talk to some vendors about different materials and stuff like that. But he's helping Ammo Inc., which is a friend of mine's company. And they have a big booth down there. I think there's like 30 or 40, 30, 40 foot booth by 10 or 20, whatever. So they'll be there, showcase.
And they're
Yeah.
probably doing the range day today, huh?
Yeah.
I'll be there tomorrow, so I'll have to stop and see him.
He was sending me pictures of strippers and all this shit last night because they got there last night.
Oh, geez. That's, yeah. Hopefully, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas,
Now
Vegas, right?
it's out there, and he's a single guy anyway, don't matter. But yeah, he's they're having fun already, you know. But anyhow, yeah, they're gonna be there showcasing. They came out like 2 years ago, a couple years ago. They came out with it's like a tracer round, but there's no incendiary, whatever the heck it's called, material on the back of the bullet. What it is like a glow in the dark patch, so to speak.
Wow,
And
that sounds pretty
when
cool.
they fire it, the light from the explosion inside the bullet charges the glow in the dark portion, and then you can see it, like a tracer round. It's pretty bad.
Wow, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty sick actually.
Yeah.
I'm not heavy into shooting, but they're fun to plink with for sure.
Oh, absolutely. But usually when you start talking about stuff like that, as you know, I live in California, so you can probably mark it down as illegal in California if it's not just a standard weapon with a standard piece of ammunition that's copper.
I'm pretty sure they are legal in California.
I'll be
That's
darned if they haven't had a chance to figure it out, right?
they targeted it so that it would be, or they designed it so that it would be legal pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah,
Yeah.
most of the stuff that they say they deem illegal, it doesn't make any sense anyways, because it's really of no significance to anything.
Oh yeah, like having a light on your bow sight, or light a knock or something stupid like that. Like, I mean,
Yeah, where and most of the like the tr some of these advanced retrieval methods, they should be legal everywhere if it's going to help you retrieve an animal, right?
yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either, but I guess we'll just keep doing our thing and helping out where we can.
Yep. I never understood that stuff. I deal with that all the time, even in my pool business with the health department. It baffles me. It baffles me how they come up with some of these things.
Oh, I could just imagine.
I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous. I had this, not to get completely off subject, off hunting here, but I remember this one time, went to go pull a permit, and short story is basically the county was okay with me putting a device that would ultimately flood the house if there was a flood, but the pool wouldn't overflow.
Oh my.
I don't fucking get it. It's okay for the house to be flooded, but the pool to be flooded? Like, that makes sense. Anyways, but shit like that, it's in every aspect, you know, haunting every little niche you could think of. There's tons of stupid
Oh,
policy,
absolutely.
tons of policy out there. Anyway,
Yeah.
so let's talk a little bit about. Well, give me a little quick run about yourself. I know you've been on the show a couple times, but I don't want to take it for granted that everybody's heard that who you are, knows who you are.
Yeah. So I live, once again, you mentioned I live in Northern California, and we will specify Northern California because
It's a different state.
Sacramento and San Francisco and everything south of that is Central California. So, but I grew up here. I actually, lived in San Francisco for a very short time, but moved to the North State and just kind of, as I grew up as a teenager, it was kind of automatic to just gravitate towards the outdoors, right? And it just I guess I'm one of those guys that, like you, gets the hunting. You understand it. You understand the animal, the pursuit, and what it means, and the challenges. And so moving on, I was able to get successful over and over and over. So with that, I started outfitting a little bit, started doing some magazine stuff, and now I work as a pro staff manager in the West for Mossy Oak. We have our own outfitting business here in Northern California, justforhunting.com. We run all of our own stuff, and we make it a point that any client that wants an adventure, regardless, even like your hunts in Arizona, we'll send somebody there if they want to go for coos or javelina. And we have some stuff in Mexico. But with that, I just got really involved in the outdoor industry, and that's got me busy. But for 43 years ago, I figured it out. 43 years ago, I harvested my first black-tailed deer.
Wow.
Yeah. Not to date myself.
Yeah, the only 45, so 2 years
Yeah,
old.
there you go. Yeah, started early, right? But and then since then, first 22 years I hunted, I harvested, at least one, usually two, sometimes three, because obviously another state. But got to the point where it wasn't about just taking deer. It was like, taking a mature deer. So then
Right.
you get to that point where you just want to share it. So, taking my grandkids hunting or another individual or outfitting, I really love to share the not only the experience but the knowledge,
Yeah, no, it's fun. It
Yeah.
is. So let's talk a little bit about the high country. I don't know, are they really blacktails in the high country? Or those are mule deer, no?
No, we have the divider here in California, which in our northern area here is Highway 3. So really the odd thing is, and everybody hears this about the black-tailed deer, is if you hunt them in the early fall, late summer, they're in the wilderness areas, and they're on the west side of Highway 3, so they're black-tails. But we have the migrating deer in California, so those same deer that migrate, they migrate, maybe 30 miles, 35 miles at the most. But those same deer, when they cross that highway, they deem them mule deer on that side of the highway. So it's really the same deer. But I understand Boone and Crockett and Pope and Young having to have a dividing line. I mean, deer obviously crossbreed.
Right.
Yeah. But the nice thing is, Boone and Crockett has a program now, and it's $100. You can send off. Like they give you a drill kit and you can drill into your antlers, send the shavings from that antler off to Boone and Crockett. They'll DNA it, and if your animal comes back 90% blacktail, they'll put it in the book for you.
Nice.
Yeah, regardless of where it's shot. But the deer that we're talking about in the high country of the Cascades, they are deemed true blacktails.
And that's what B zone, right?
Yep, mostly B zone. Yeah, yep.
What are the hunt dates? Archery starts what, late August or?
Yeah, it's usually archery starts the third weekend August, and then it runs to about the second weekend of September, and then they give you a 1 week break, and then the third week of September, the gun season starts and then runs till the end of September. Well, usually the third weekend of October, excuse me. And this year it rotated late, so it actually ended like the 25th of October, something like that.
Got it. So if a guy was wanting to come out and do a hunt like that on their own, doesn't have time to come out there and actually scout, what are some of the things you do? Well, first let me ask you this: how do you like to hunt it? That country? Are you glassing? Are you?
Yeah, it's fully glassing. I mean, it's the wilderness we have here is pretty rugged, so you're not going to do any pushes. Spot and stalk is kind of the method you're going to use, but of course, glassing first and locating the animal. You might find some areas that have a couple people that go there, and you can maybe get on an escape route or something, but and that's obviously with a gun or something, but bow and arrow, it's strictly glassing and spot and stalk.
Gotcha. So no, never having been there, never hunted B-zone, what would you tell me to do, like, to start my scouting efforts or start my efforts for looking to find a place?
Yeah, the first thing, and I say this to guys on, I don't care if they're going to Idaho, Arizona, Nevada, any state, Iowa, the first thing you're going to do is call a local biologist and say, hey, I'm going to this area. Where do the deer summer? Where do they migrate from? And then get yourself a map, mark this stuff as you get it from the biologist. That way you can kind of track where the animals are going to be at a given time.
Nice.
Yeah. And nowadays, I mean, you can go to a forum, you can go to our website, shoot me an email. I mean, I'm not going to give guys my honey hole, but I'm certainly going to, and I've done it numerous times to where I give people trails to hike in, or areas to target where they'll have a chance at, harvesting a deer.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Like, what do you look for? Like, if I'm looking at a map, if I'm looking at topo, I'm looking at satellite, what are some of the things you're looking for to pick an area?
Yeah, so with that high country, it's believe it or not, it's high alpine. So it's like the gray granite rock that goes into chutes, and there's lakes all over the place, and then it runs into the thicker brush and even the timber. But those deer, of course, if you're going to hunt them bow and arrow early, they're going to be in velvet, so they're going to be out in the open. So you can find a high ridge and just glass, and you're going to find deer regardless. But that's what I look for, is some high basins that are kind of east or southeast facing. It's going to give you some more sun and some lush growth. And that's early in the year. That's where those deer are going to be, is out on those open hillsides, eating the small forbs and grasses that grow out in those hillsides.
Nice. What would you suggest that a hunter only has at like 7 to 14 days total, including the days to scout? What would you tell them to be spending their time doing?
So once they get there, right? Because so obviously you've probably already done, after the other question, you've done your research and you're in an area that houses deer. So once you get there, first thing I would say is, if you're going to be hiking in, because most of this is pack in stuff. We do some horse pack trips, but hiking is pretty easy. There's trailheads all over. But have your weapon ready, whether it be your bow or your gun, because I've had guys numerous times hiking in, and I had told them, have your weapon ready, and they're like, you were right. They walked up the trail about a mile and a half, and here was a nice buck standing off the trail. And they missed an opportunity that they could have been done in, the first 2 hours of their hunt.
Wow.
But definitely be prepared as far as ready with your weapon on hiking the trail, because the deer up there, they see backpackers and trekkers all summer long. So along the trails, they're kind of, they're not very skittish, but once you start going cross country, they get that, it's game on, and you got to be careful, going into basins and stuff like that. But But what I would suggest, if someone has limited time, get up on a high spot, glass a basin, glass it for that first light, and you can see for miles if you get up high enough. It's an awesome country. But if you're not seeing deer out feeding, and say it's not a full moon, obviously that has some effect. But if you're not seeing deer or bucks that you want to pursue, don't be afraid to move to the next basin. Don't spend 5, 6, 7 days looking for deer that aren't there, right?
Right. I tell people that a lot. Matter of fact, I just said that to a guy, sent me on a message on Instagram. And he's like, "Hey, I'm here in blah blah blah, part of Arizona, and I'm from here." And he's like, "I am not seeing deer at all." And I just told him, I said, "Listen, you can't turn trees into deer, especially at this time of year. It's the rut. If it was early season, I would say, you know what, pick it apart way more." But the rut, if you're not seeing does, there's not, and there's probably not deer in there, and it's January, it's colder,
They're on the move. Yeah.
you're gonna see deer eventually, if you're looking in an area that there's deer. So I said, if you don't see them, pull up stakes and go to the next spot, stake and move, stake and move. Actually, Dwayne Adams was the first guy to teach me that years ago, because I would go to one area and I would sit there and I would glass and I would glass and I would glass. And, I might turn up a deer that had been laying down for, the whole day, but I could have had so many more opportunities had I, gone through it thoroughly and then just moved on to the next place.
Absolutely, yeah.
So.
I just did a over the weekend I was at ISE and I did a seminar on California deer, and I just tell people, I say, you got to hunt where deer are if you want to harvest deer. And deer can run, they can hide, they can be invisible, but the one thing that deer cannot do is not leave a footprint. So you're going to know if they're there.
Right. There's sign there. If there's tracks, scat, obvious stuff, hair on fence crossings, stuff like that.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff to look for. And if you don't find it, like you said, move on. There's and you're hunting an area that, I mean, it's different if you're hunting a, say, for a specific deer and you know he's in a certain basin and you're going to sit there and wait for him all day. But if you're just looking for deer, you gotta, I mean, where you're going to hunt better house, more than, like in the wilderness, you're going to see anywhere from 5 to 12 bucks a day up there. If you don't, you find a different basin.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of areas, like here in Arizona, units that, I mean, you could go 2 days without seeing deer, period. And you'll see a little bit of sign here, a little bit of sign there. And there's those little low density areas that hold giant bucks. And when you see one, they're going to be big usually. But, if you're going and you only got 7 days to hunt or whatever, and it's out of state hunt or what, you gotta go where the deer are. You just gotta keep moving until you find areas with a decent population that are workable.
Yeah, and that lends itself to the earlier conversation about preparation. You got to have your target area and then have your plan A, B, and C. You got to go through if one's not successful, because deer rotate too. They something might have happened where the food dried up, it might be hot. Maybe there was a predator in the area and moved them out, but you got to be able to locate to a new area and find those deer.
Oh yeah, for sure. Happens all the time.
Yeah.
You talk about preparation. Well, let me speak to this a little bit, or have you speak to this anyway. I mean, realistically, you're a guide. You see it often. How far should a guy be able to shoot effectively with archery equipment during those archery hunts and rifle hunt? What type of shots do you typically see?
So, well, and I mean, the technology nowadays is through the roof. I mean, and Western hunting is a far cry from Eastern whitetail hunting. And working from Ossie Oak, I get that. These guys are, shooting 15 to 35 yards out of a tree stand, right? So out here, I mean, the further you can shoot, further your effective range the higher your success is going to be. You know, give yourself a chance. And I tell guys, if you can shoot to 80, that's great. If you can shoot effectively to 60, just know that you can get 60 yards from a deer. You can get 15 from a deer here on a spot stock. So with bow and arrow, you know, you just got to have your know what your range is and don't go outside of it. You know, it's not worth chasing a wounded deer around because you're not gonna. The wilderness is huge. So with bow and arrow, I'd say certainly 60 to 80 yards. I mean, I have a 100-yard pin on my bow, but I shoot regularly. I practice at 100 yards. Would I shoot a deer at 100 yards? No, I don't think I would, but it's great to have if, heaven forbid, if you need a follow-up shot.
Right.
You know, but at 60 yards, I'm confident all day long at 60 yards to start flinging arrows. Now with a gun, I'm not a long range guy. Now there's guys here that are shooting 800, 900, 1,000 yards across canyons, right? And effectively, the technology's there. If that's what you're into, you know, just practice and get good at it, and kind of know that the mountains are a bit different though with the thermals and the crosswinds and all this stuff. So a lot can happen outside of 500 yards with a bullet, you know, and but it's a good tool to have, but just know what you're using, you know.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, just as an average, what do you think the archery shots, what do you see?
Probably inside of 40 yards.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's spot and stock. I mean, we'll sit up there on a high spot and we'll watch 10 or 11 bucks. They go feed along and they go to bed. So we mark where they're bed, and then you know we kind of graph off a hillside, and excuse me, we will start on what we think is the best buck to pursue, and then should that stock fail, we go on to the next one. You know, as long as he didn't cascade the whole basin, right? But
Right.
usually, I mean, they're conked out, and you got rocks and some bushes and trees. You know, the thermals at that point are going straight up, so you don't have to worry too much about the wind. You know, as long as you take your time, and when I say take your time, it might be 4 or 5 hours on a stock. I mean, you can get close to those deer and shoot them at, you know, inside of 20 yards even.
Nice.
Now, gun range, the gun hunting up there, it's wide open. You can see deer a mile away, you know, and just figure how close you need to get, you know. But obviously at, you know, 500, 600, 700 yards, deer, you know, they're usually not going to be alerted to your presence, and you can get close enough to kind of sneak through the trees. And different time of year where the deer are kind of out of the basin, so you got more cover, so you can get closer.
Yeah. Oh. Well, that sounds pretty good, man. I might have to come do that this year.
Yeah,
I know
yeah.
you and I have been talking about it for several years, but it's, I don't know, something always comes up, and I always like to do that A zone hunt. So I kind of, I don't know, I kind of take myself out of going back there for some reason, because I go, you know,
Yeah.
gone there once already, you know, but.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about the B zones is you can get a straight B zone tag, cover 6 units, and you can come archery hunt, and if you're unsuccessful, you can come back and gun hunt.
Right.
So it's one of our few tags left that actually offer both seasons, because most of the east side stuff has gone to either you have to apply for archery tag or a gun tag.
Right. I mean, I know that Charles and I were talking about it this year. He actually hunted B zone this year. He didn't hunt. He hunted A zone a little bit. Hunted B zone on his own. I was unable to go, unfortunately. My father-in-law had passed away in July, and so I canceled my trip to Cali, as I never made it there this year. So, but we talked about it after, because he went hunting there, and he's like, "Oh man, this is awesome place." He's like, "Right up your alley, you know." You know, for me, I was like, what everything he told me was like, "Yeah, this is something I need to do." So, and I've told him, like, you know, Perry's been trying to get me to go to B for a long time. I gotta talk to him. Maybe we'll put something together and go. But yeah, I gotta give that some serious thought.
Yeah, and it's you know, the nice thing about the B zones in the wilderness is I mean, you still want to use your mapping, whatever you use, OnX or whatever, and you can track yourself and download maps, but you really don't have to worry about any private property. It's 3.1 million acres of wilderness, right? So it's not like whatever you see, you don't have to look at your map and say, "Oh, can I shoot that deer?" You just got to look at your map and say, "How long is it going to take for me to get to that deer?"
Right. No, that's huge. Do you use Onyx Maps?
I do, yeah. I'm actually on their pro staff as well, and it's a great tool. I went to Idaho and used it. I even use it here on our local ranches to confirm landowners and property boundaries if I'm in an area where I'm not familiar with who the neighbor is. I'll just confirm use it to confirm the boundaries.
I feel like nowadays I feel like if I don't have Onyx loaded for that for whatever I'm hunting, I feel very naked.
Yeah.
I got so used to using it for everything. I use it for the stalks and everything. Like I mark where I think the deer is on the map. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I do that now, and it's been really good. It's afforded me a lot of opportunities I don't think I would have had.
Oh, absolutely. It's like, one of those things like your binoculars. You're not going to forget it. So that's you're naked if you don't have it. And it's a great tool. Those guys have done such a good job and they constantly update. And I mean, anywhere you go, you ought to be looking at that for sure.
Yeah. Let's
So.
talk about the deer themselves a little bit. What are they typically feeding on in that early portion of the year when the archery season, when they're still in velvet? What is their favorite stuff? What are some of their, let's start with the feed and then we'll go into some of their habits.
Yeah, so the feed that time of year, they're kind of that's why I go to these upper basins that are alpine basins. They have some timber pockets, brush pockets, but it's fairly open. And there's a certain forb, I don't remember the name of the forb, but it's a little green forb that grows, and they spend hours in the morning and right before dark and all night long feeding on that particular food on this open basin. Now, as soon as that stuff dries up, it's amazing. It dries up like maybe the end of August. As soon as that forb's gone, the deer start to head for the brush patches, more of the timber, maybe even some acorns. But up there, it's mostly low brush, like tan oak acorns that they go to. But those come in a little bit later. So they get out of those basins and just look for any feed they can still find under the vegetation, even manzanita berries. They'll feed on manzanita berries. But it kind of coincides with when their antlers get hard, and boy, they just all of a sudden disappear.
Yeah. What I was actually going to ask you that. When do they typically shed?
It's usually somewhere in the first week of September. We've shot velvet deer in there as late as like the 7th. But usually they're pretty loose, partial velvet, or they slides off when you grab them. So if you want to shoot a velvet deer, you should plan on coming the first week of the season, or at least the first couple weeks. Gun season in the third week of September when you go in there, you're going to find a lot more traffic as far as people, and the deer are going to be hard antlered and way more on edge.
And then now because they're not trying to protect their antlers, they're bedding in thicker stuff and
Oh yeah, and they're going through wherever they want to go. Nothing holds them back.
Any specific like habits or behavioral characteristics that guys should know that kind of, I mean, differentiate them from your typical mule deer, something that would help a guy out, like, these deer typically do this every day, or,
Well,
they like.
just like all deer, it's food and water and shelter, and usually in that order, believe it or not. And there's when I say shelter, it might be a rock outcropping they're laying under just to be in the shade. So our, middle of August to the end of August, we're still down here in the valley, we're 100 to 110 degrees. Up there in the wilderness, it might get up to 75 or 80 degrees, sometimes 90. So those deer are hot. They don't want to be laying out in the sun, even up there at, 6, 7,000 feet, 8,000 feet. So they're gonna lay under a rock outcropping in a little strip of timber, maybe. So when you're glassing and you find them bedded, they're really difficult to find bedded because they're not really out in the open. So you really need to find those deer when they're moving in the morning and see where they're going. But as far as setting up on water, there's just usually so much water, it's really hard to set up and know that they're going to come to the same water every day.
Gotcha. There's just like creeks everywhere and springs and.
Oh yeah, it's if you can imagine, it's usually the third week of June to the end of June before you can even get over the passes that are at 7,000 feet.
Because of the snow.
Yeah, because of the snow.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and then they're pretty habitual as far as any deer that's not bothered. I mean, if they're bedding in a certain area, they're gonna bed there all summer long as long as they're not bothered by a predator. If they're bothered by a predator, they'll probably come back. But now, if they start getting bothered by, say, somebody that's scouting early on, and they start going across the basins, they're going to get bothered by that, and they're going to move off. I mean, I've had like, oh, it was about 4 years ago, I guess, we were up there, and I was with a friend and his wife, and we found a group of 5 bucks, and 3 of those bucks were, would have made book. Which is 135 inches. But so we watched them one morning, and then all of a sudden there was a couple guys that came up the north side of the basin, and they were probably, oh, I would say 3/4 of a mile from these deer. These guys never saw the deer, but the deer were alerted to them either by their scent or by their presence. And for 4 days, we looked for those deer and couldn't find them.
Wow.
They never came back to the same place they were feeding, and I know they'd been there all summer because I'd seen them on a previous trip. So
Gotcha.
that's how sensitive those. And I mean, we're talking about anywhere you go. I don't care where it is. If you get a 4.5 to a 6.5 year old deer, they know what's going on. They don't stick around. They didn't get to be that old by, hanging out and seeing what's going on.
Oh, yeah. So you were just saying 135 is that's Pope and Young, correct?
Pope and Young is actually 90. So Pope and Young is way, yeah. In fact, I talked to one of the gals at Pope and Young over the weekend, and I'm like, man, you guys really need to raise the bar on this 90 inches is Pope and Young for blacktail. And as you know, that's pretty low. I mean, what that's a coos is like what 100 or something for Boone and Crockett.
Or Crockett, yeah, it's
Yeah.
60, I think.
So, but she's like, it's really difficult to change those processes that have been in there for lots of years, right? And I think Pope and Young is, it goes way back to traditional. So, traditional archery probably, they might be legitimate on 90 inches, but really, if you shoot anything substantial and as far as a fork and horn, you're gonna make Pope and Young with the blacktail deer.
Gotcha. So, give me a scale. What do you typically see on that type of hunt from what size?
You're going to see all sizes, but it's way doable to shoot 120 inch deer. When you start going getting to a 3x3, a mature 3x3, 3.5, 4.5 years old, is probably going to be about anywhere from 114 to 120 inches.
Gotcha.
Your 4x4s are going to be 120 inches and greater. And there's some oddball deer in there too, where they get some, flyers and hangers and stuff like that. But it's really, people don't realize how difficult it really is to shoot 135 inch true blacktail.
I know.
Yeah, it's a big deer. I mean, I've shot, I don't know, probably close to 100 blacktails, and with a rifle, I've shot one blacktail that qualifies true blacktail that was over 135 inches.
Really?
Yeah. Not that, and now Pope and Young, different story. I'm probably one of the worst as far as, And you know, we all know that we put a deer in the record book for the deer and for the education of the species. But I just, you know, I have a bunch of deer that I've had scored, and I just never put them in the book. So kind of lost track of that. The number, just you know, mature deer is what it means to me.
Right. So let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about if I was going to come hunt with you, explain to me the camping situation or the amenity situation and what to expect on a hunt with you.
We're going into the wilderness, so obviously we're going on foot. So expect to hike anywhere from 3 miles to 10 miles. I mean, you can go further, don't get me wrong. That's just base camp. And normally where we camp is, where I camp anyways, is around, 5,500 to 6,200 feet. And then you're looking at a basin that rises up to about 7,500. So you look at that basin, and then you're hiking up that basin every day to stalk a deer. You can camp higher and maybe have better access, but I'm just a proponent of being by water and down in the bottom where your scent is not just distributing itself over the basins.
Got it.
Yeah, so you're gonna pack for, you know, 5 days. You know, that's a pretty good trip in there. You can always come out and get more if you want to go for 7 days, 8 days. You know, as you know, if you start getting over 5 days of packing food, and water's not too critical to pack because there's plenty of creeks. You just have to have some sort of filtration system. But if you start packing for over 5 days, it's really difficult to stay under 50 pounds worth of gear.
Yeah, that's
Especially if you're gonna, like myself, I carry a spotting scope with me. And binoculars, simply because I'm looking at deer. I don't want to walk a mile and a half or hike a mile and a half for a deer that turns out not to be a deer I wanted to shoot.
right.
So that's one huge thing for people to realize is don't spend your half a day stalking a deer that you're only going to look at and not shoot. You know, make sure you know you're going to want to shoot that deer, because that's a half a day is a long time on a, you know, a 5 day hunt when you're thinking about you only have 5 days of opportunity.
Right.
Yeah. But with that, one thing I do is for sure, take a bear tag with you too, because there's bears all over the place. But if you're going to decide to shoot a bear, remember your deer hunt's kind of over for the time being,
Yeah.
you know, 'cause it's hot and you got to get them out of there. But you can, you know, you can expect to pack in, like I said, 3 to 10 miles. You know, have your tent. You can sleep out in the open if you want, but there is occasional afternoon thunder showers, so you want to be able to get dry. It gets cold at night. You know, it can get into the 30s, so you're gonna have some. Really, it's a perfect place to test your layering techniques, because you're gonna go from about 35 to 40 degrees in the morning to 70 to 80 degrees in the afternoon. You know, and
Yeah.
especially if you're hiking 1,500 feet up to stalk on some deer.
Something I'm very, very familiar with.
Yeah, that's Arizona in the middle.
I think I told you the story last year when you were hunting coos deer with me about the January where we started off the morning was 7 degrees and then it got up to 77.
Yeah, that's just crazy. Yeah, you're down to shorts and a t-shirt by the time you're done.
Yep. Crazy. I didn't feel my toes in the morning, and by the end of the day, I was like dying. Matter of fact, I ran out of water that day because I was like, oh, you know, I didn't bring that much water, you know, on my pack. You know, I had plenty of water at the truck, but I was
Yeah, see, so that's the difference between your Arizona hunt and this hunt is water. You have to pack water on this hunt. You know, you're gonna pack water for the hike and whatnot, but you can always camp close enough to water that you can refill every day, or even along the way on your you know, on your stalk, you can stop and fill water in one of the springs.
Yeah, see, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's kind of nice. The camping's pretty. You usually camp in an area that's you know, pretty covered with timber and stuff, so you're sheltered. And I always bring a spool of 4 pound test line with some little flies, And I'll cut an alder branch that's, about 6 feet long, and I'll just tie the string, the fishing line, on the end of the stick, about probably 6 or 7 feet long, and you can catch brook trout there pretty much all day long.
That's huge.
Yeah, and you can eat those brook trout too. We'll pack in some aluminum foil, or usually somebody, you have a vacuum sealed bag or something, that use that bag. And I've boiled the fish, I've grilled it, but it's all pretty tasty when you're 2 or 3 days in on Mountain House or something like that.
Yeah, I bet. I'd say, I can't do Mountain House. I'm allergic to garlic and onions, and there's literally, except for the scrambled eggs with cheese and the ice cream,
Yeah.
and if some of the other dessert stuff, I can't do Mountain House. I can't do almost any of those, because they make up for, lack of taste by just bombarding them with garlic and onions and
And salt.
salt, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, and it really, I mean, it's high octane stuff. So, I mean, most of that stuff is 2 servings. So, I mean, backpacking, it blows you up. Don't get me wrong. You're gonna burn over 3,500 calories a day. But still, replacing it with that rich of food, your body can only take so much.
Yeah. I have to make my own stuff, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I mean, they're coming out with some new stuff. I think there's some peak stuff now that's pretty good, and a lot of folks are realizing it's not that difficult to make your own dehydrated food,
Yep.
and it can be healthy. But I just, I'll pack some bagels and some trail mix for extra octane. But you use some like Wilderness Out Athlete or Mountain Ops or one of these others as far as electrolyte drinks.
Yeah.
They're pretty huge because, I mean, water, don't get me wrong, water's great, and but if you have something that's flavored, it really makes you drink more of what you're drinking.
True. That is true. Yeah. If you could share with us one of your favorite bow hunting B zone stories.
Yeah, so I actually have a really good one, and it lends itself to everything we talked about. So, for gosh dang, I'm thinking about close to 30 years now, 25 anyway. We've been going pretty much to the same area, myself and a couple buddies. And unfortunately, it got a little busier in that area, so we rotated to the second weekend instead of the first. And the people kind of get out of there, and the deer settle back down. But early on, before the popularity of archery really took off, these guys were packing in. I couldn't go until Saturday morning because I was working, and then they packed in on Friday, set up camp, and at that time they had horses. We had gone in on horses, and so I went, started about 2 hours early in the dark, hiking in on Saturday morning. The idea was to hike around the basin that they would be hunting, and then come over the top and eventually meet them back at our camp spot at dark. Well, I hiked up and got, above everything in that basin before daylight. And sure enough, hiking, I mean, these are bluffs that you're hiking along, and you're looking down, 20, 30 feet, and had some deer come up underneath of me, and one of them was a really nice buck. So here I was in a t-shirt and shorts because I was packing in, and obviously it's warm enough that, you don't want to get your hunting clothes all sweaty. And they had packed in most of my gear already with the horses. One of these deer ended up being a nice enough deer that I shot, and ended up harvesting this deer. And I had my pack frame, so I, of course, put them all together and packed them. But it was like probably 4 in the afternoon before I got them down the hill to where the camp was. And my mistake for not boning them out. Now I never go out of there without a boned out deer. But this particular deer ended up being a, pretty nice deer, 123 inch, 5x3.
Nice.
And those guys had hunted all day and not found a deer. And I came in and I had still my backpacking clothes on. So that was the story was that I was wearing my trekker disguise. I was a backpacker in disguise, so the deer had no idea I was a hunter.
You know what, man? There is something to that. I gotta say, there's times, and I mean, we figured that out years ago. We call it the lost hiker maneuver. We just kind of walk, and you don't look at the deer, and you just kind of walk, and you walk in like a circle, and you kind of get close to them, And if you're wearing, you know, like regular clothes, they'll stand there and look at you. You got camouflage on and you make any kind of movement like, you know,
Towards them.
yeah, that you're a predator of any sort, boom, they're gone, you know. This last, was it last year? Yeah, last year. My cousin Paul had a rifle mule deer tag, late season rifle mule deer tag, awesome tag. And he was, you know, looking for a very specific caliber of buck. We looked over a lot of deer, passed a bunch of bucks, and the rut was in December for muley. Finally, I found him a good buck, found about a 160 4x4. And we were getting set up on him because he could have shot him from where we were at. We were, you know, under 500 yards. And he laid down, and the sun was coming up worse and worse and worse. It was blinding him in his eyes, and he couldn't see through his scope anymore. And now the deer had like rebedded, and we couldn't see the body and all that stuff anyway. So I'm like, listen, I'm going to drop down here. I'm going to move. I'm going to change angles. And I'm going to radio to you if I can see him better from that spot. And if we can shoot from this spot. So I make my way down there, sneak over there, get him in the glass. Sure enough, from this angle, you can see his vitals perfect, laying everything. The sun's not that bad from this angle. So I radio over to him. I said, okay, guys, it was him and my buddy Gasper. And I'm like, listen, I want you to drop off the hill that you're on, get down in those trees, and slowly come to me, because if these deer see you coming across that flat, and you know, they're gonna bust. You know, they're gonna get up and go. Anyway, so I don't know what happened. Well, Gasper didn't have a radio in his ear, so he didn't hear what I said, and Paul didn't tell Gasper what I had said. And so Gasper's like, kind of like quickly coming across the flat and like hunched over, you know? So like that whole like hunched over and quickly got moving, all those deer stood up and you know, they started going up the hill. And then Paul finally got to me and we got him laid down, and I'm like, hi man, you gotta get him in the scope and get it, he's gonna go, you know, he's starting to walk up the hill and da 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 whatever. Long story short, we never got him, but they looked like two coyotes coming across the flat at 500 yards, the way they were walking, you know, like hunched over and like quickly moving, instead of like going slow and like making a very like not obvious that you're hunting, you know. It was just,
Yeah, the deer, they're amazing. If something doesn't look like it belongs there, they're usually out of there.
I'm like, you guys would have been better off if you just would have walked straight up and down and just slowly walked across the bottom. They would have not even thought twice about you. But
Oh.
because you were like, you know, like hunched over and kind of like walking, you know, walking quickly and sneaking, looking like you were sneaking,
Yeah.
that was
Well,
fun.
and the thing with Arizona, you can't really, your stalks are difficult because everything down there has a thorn, you know, it's going to jab you if you're crawling around on the ground.
No, it's brutal sometimes, but
But yeah, you try just about everything to try to fool a deer, and you know, the confusion thing with any, you know, species, usually it's short-lived. You know, your window's pretty short to figure out what you need to do because they're going to figure out what they need to do pretty fast.
right. Well, I guess all I got for you.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's enough for the listeners because you know, that's what it's all about. And like you, I'm the same way. If anybody has any questions, you know, just reach out. You know, we kind of have an I don't want to say an unfair advantage because we worked really hard for it, but being in the industry, being in the woods a lot, you know, we have people we can bounce things off of. People, you know, and we get to, as far as gear, you know, we got the best of the best usually, and which doesn't lend itself to a successful hunt for sure, but just being able to talk to people that have done it and experienced it's going to help, especially if you're short time in it, like we're talking about here. Any help somebody else can give you is going to, you're going to be miles ahead.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you for coming on, man. I appreciate it. You're always wealth of knowledge, and I enjoy having you on. So, real quick, where can our listeners find out about you and your guide service?
Yep. So go to www.justforhunting, all text written out, for the word, not the number, justforhunting.com. Or if you feel like just shooting me an email direct, just email it to hunter@justforhunting.com. And like I say, all questions are welcome. If you feel that's this Northern California wilderness hunting, B-zone hunting, any hunting up here, something you want to do, give me a shout. We'll go over the details and make sure you have a good chance at success before you even get here.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. And I will talk to you soon. I'll see you in a couple of weeks, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds great. We'll talk soon. I appreciate it, John.
All right, buddy. Take it easy.
All right. See you.